Radio Prague News.
The EU will not make a decision on whether to reimpose visas for Canadians until the autumn, the Czech Foreign Minister said on Monday. Police have found the body of a 40-year-old woman who may be the 15th victim of early July's flash floods, and the Communist Party has said that it's ready to apologise for past wrongs if that leads to closer cooperation with the centre-left Social Democrats. The European Union will not make a decision on whether to reimpose visas for Canadians until the autumn, Czech Foreign Minister Jan Kohout said in Brussels on Monday. The Czech Republic has asked the EU to consider introducing visas for Canadians in retaliation to Ottawa's decision to reintroduce visas for Czechs. According to Mr. Kohout on Monday, however, the EU's response first has to be considered by the European Commission, and nothing will be decided upon before September. Following 2 years of visa-free travel, Canada reintroduced visas for Czechs on July the 14th after thousands of Czech Roma applied for asylum. Police have found the body of a 40-year-old woman in Benešov nad Ploučnici, who they say may be the 15th victim of the flash floods which struck the country in early July. A spokesperson for the police in Děčín said forensic specialists were now trying to identify the woman, who was found in a river on Monday morning. The results of DNA tests should be known in a month, spokesman Ladislav Cvik added. The body is thought to be that of a woman who disappeared on July the 4th when helping others escape flash floods in North Bohemia. The floods claimed at least 14 lives around the Czech Republic and caused billions of crowns worth of damage. The Czech Communist Party has said that it's ready to apologise for wrongs committed under communism in the former Czechoslovakia if that leads to closer cooperation with the centre-left Social Democratic Party after October's elections. On Monday, Communist leader Wojciech Filip told Hospodarské noviny that the left's cooperation was in everyone's best interest and that his party was ready to say sorry if that would lead to closer ties between the two parties. According to Hospodarské noviny, however, the Social Democrats have no interest in such a deal. Deputy chairman of the Social Democrats, Zdeněk Škromák, told the paper that the communists could well apologise, but that this would not change anything. The Communist Party already apologised for past wrongs after the Velvet Revolution in 1989. Czech energy giant ČEZ said on Monday lunchtime that it was still trying to reconnect some 600 customers left without electricity after storms last Thursday. Extreme weather felled trees and cut power cables around the Czech Republic, initially leaving around 150,000 people without power. Electricity supplier ČEZ said that it would have to spend in the region of $30 to $40 million, which is between $1.7 and $2.2 million, to repair the damage caused by the storms. Two people were killed in last Thursday's storms, which caused severe disruption around the country. A quick look at the weather now, and it should be mostly sunny over the next couple of days with the occasional rain shower and temperatures ranging between 22 and 26 degrees Celsius. I'm Rosie Johnston, and that's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague. I'm Christian Falvey. Many thanks to you for tuning in. Today, President Václav Klaus objects to what he calls the exaggeration of the roles of individuals in the Velvet Revolution. Many Czech language schools are facing troubled times, another casualty of the economic crisis, or simply a saturated market. And finally, on this week's One-on-One, Chris Johnstone speaks with Czech politician, diplomat, and journalist Václav Bartuška on his leading role in the 1989 student protests.
In fact, it wasn't that difficult to become a leader because there were very few people who actually did something.
I hope you'll stay with us today for all that and more here on Radio Prague. All this year, Czechs are remembering the fall of communism in November of 1989. But just what was it exactly? Was it the overthrow of communism or simply the collapse? That's a debate that's still simmering away in Czech society. And on Saturday, the country's president, Václav Klaus, once again waded into it, telling students in Prague that the role of individuals in 1989 is often overestimated. Rob Cameron has more.
It's not the first time that Václav Klaus has entered the debate on what or who caused the events of 1989. He's long maintained that the role of individuals, i.e. anti-communist dissidents, has been vastly exaggerated in the history of what happened 20 years ago. Speaking in Prague to around 100 students of the American Institute on Political and Economic Systems, Mr. Klaus said he'd long defended the rather unpopular concept that communism was not defeated, but that it collapsed, that it simply evaporated. The president said communism at the end of the 1980s was weak, old, exhausted and devoid of content, and so it could not exist much longer. Some people, he said, were not happy about such an interpretation because it fundamentally diminished their role in the process. That could be interpreted as a dig at his predecessor Václav Havel, the playwright and well-known dissident who found himself catapulted to the forefront of the so-called Velvet Revolution in 1989. Mr. Havel is modest by nature and downplays his own contribution, although he has been moved to defend attacks on the dissidents and their contribution to those momentous events on several occasions. When asked by the Times newspaper to speak about his own role in the revolution, he says 1989 was a swell in the tide of history, fueled by communism's systemic failure and largely due to one man, Mikhail Gorbachev, even though he was barely aware of the forces he was unleashing, forces that would eventually destroy the Soviet Union and the communist regimes of its satellites. Václav Klaus's theory that communism withered away into nothing rather than being slowly chipped away by determined individuals will certainly be discussed again in this anniversary year, as Czechs and Slovaks mark 20 years since what? The end of communism, perhaps, in Central and Eastern Europe.
Rob Cameron there with that story. Now, language teaching in the Czech Republic has been big business since the fall of communism, with many people hoping that improving their language skills will increase their job prospects. Now, however, there has been a suggestion that up to 30% of the country's language schools could go to the wall in the not-too-distant future. Chris Johnstone has been finding out why.
In many big Czech cities, it almost seems that every major street has its own language school. The Prague phone book alone has around 100 language schools listed. But the sector, which boomed in the 1990s following the fall of the Iron Curtain and rush above all to learn English, is now facing a severe crunch. The Association of Language Schools and Agencies, one of the industry's two main umbrella bodies, predicts that 20 to 30% of existing schools and businesses could close their doors within a year. Association Vice President Petr Pasek says the main factor is the squeeze put on corporate courses. He says companies faced themselves by hard times because of the economic crisis have either cut courses for their employees altogether or are forcing swingeing cuts in the prices charged by schools.
Some Prague-based language schools are going down by 20% in their prices, which could kill the smaller ones, because the bigger ones are, they can survive 1 year with worse prices, but the smaller school might have problems.
Mr. Pasek says that company training offers an easy target for cuts, even for companies that still have to feel the brunt of the downturn.
That's either because companies are not doing very well at the moment, or because they're saving money just in case. They are doing fine, but they're cutting down on costs, and the first kind of visible, most visible cost is education for their employees.
Some language schools rely on company training for around 80% of their income, and even if they are able to redirect themselves towards general courses for the public, there is not much hope on that front either. Marketa Pokorna is the owner of a mid-sized Prague language school, which employs around 30 teachers. She says public courses are also feeling the pinch.
Households are also trying to save money, so from my experience, the public courses are more reduced than the businesses.
Ms. Pokorna says language schools are cutting courses and teachers. While she has not yet heard of any schools going bust, the harsh lessons from the economic downturn are likely to be learnt when course enrolment begins again in September.
Thanks to Chris Johnstone for that report. Specialists in Brno have presented a new emergency transport system aimed at saving horses that suffer tendon injuries or fractures. In the past, rescuers have had to improvise to save injured horses in the Czech Republic, but now a new vehicle modified to make transport easier is going into use. The first such specialized service in Central Europe should help save horses which would otherwise have to be put down. A little earlier, Jan Wellinger spoke to Dr. Zdeněk Žert of the University of Veterinary and Pharmaceutical Sciences in Brno, one of the main initiators of the project.
It was originally my idea to help horses which have some problems by transportation to the clinic, to support them during the transport in case of serious injury of the tendon, joint or the bone. You need to support the horse during the transport and to help them be introduced into the practice this device.
Are or is any similar such system used elsewhere in this part of Europe?
Yeah. We got the inspiration originally in Switzerland, afterwards in Italy, and even the British system is organized similarly. It's a normal horse trailer which is used for the routine transport of horses. But inside of the trailer, there is a special construction which allowed to support the horse during the transport with a special net. We are thinking that this particular transporter will be used perhaps 20 times a year. It's not really frequently to be used, but it's necessary to have it because the fracture or luxation of the joint is really serious trauma. And it is vital for the horse to be safely transported to the clinic.
Do you foresee it being used, for instance, at farms or during races, for example?
Yeah, preventively, we will use this device to be ready for using during the races, during the competition, where is injury of the horses, of the bone or joints, really frequent. The seat of the device will be here in our clinic. We have about 15 to 20 cases of fractures in the horse in the Czech Republic. We are able to transport even the horses from the western part of the Slovakia as well. So I think it would be useful.
Veterinarian Zdeněk Žert talking to our reporter Jan Wellinger. For those of you who may just be tuning in, thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Christian Falvey. Coming up, of course, we'll have our weekly interview program, One-on-One, but ahead of that, we'll take a look at the latest from the world of Czech sport with Ian Willoughby.
Roman Kreuziger has become the first Czech ever to finish in the top 10 in cycling's premier stage race, the Tour de France. Indeed, after coming 12th last year, he had set himself the specific target of breaking into the top 10, a target he had looked like missing. But Kreuziger managed to make up ground on the penultimate stage, the grueling and windy Mont Ventoux, where he finished 7th and moved up to 9th overall. The man from Moravská Třebová held on to that position in Sunday's final stage, finishing the Tour de France 9th. Romain Kreuziger is only 23 and is tipped to achieve a lot more, but he's already being regarded as probably the greatest Czech cyclist ever. The Czech Football League kicked off at the weekend, with Teplice playing host to Sparta Prague in Friday's opening game, which ended 0-0. Slavia Prague came from behind to draw 1-1 at home with Mladá Boleslav, though things could have gone even worse for the reigning champions if a late Boleslav strike hadn't hit the woodwork. Among the other results in round one, Baník Ostrava beat Příbram 2-1 at home, while Slovan Liberec drew 1-1 with Kladno in Liberec. On Tuesday, Sparta host Panathinaikos in the first leg of their tie to reach the Champions League group stage. The next night, Slavia are in action in the same competition, away to Sheriff Tiraspol of Moldova. Pavel Nedved's future remains unclear, though he has ruled out playing in Europe again. Speaking as a special guest on Sunday at a cup game between his first club, Dukla, and Radotín, Nedved told journalists he had just been on holiday in the US and had a number of offers to join a major league soccer club. However, the midfielder, who turns 37 in a month's time, said it was unlikely he would decide to accept any of them. Nedved, one of only two Czechs to have been named European Player of the Year, made his final appearance for Juventus at the end of last season. Finally, swimming, and Tomáš Fučík set a new Czech record in the 100 metres backstroke at the World Swimming Championships in Rome on Monday morning. He knocked 44 hundredths of a second off his own record from last year, setting a new national best of 56.10 seconds. However, that wasn't good enough to earn Fučík a place in the final in Rome. That's all the sport for today.
Many thanks to Ian Willoughby. Wrapping up our program today in this week's One-on-One, Chris Johnstone speaks with politician, diplomat and journalist Václav Bartuška.
Václav Bartuška was one of the leaders of the student protests which toppled the Czechoslovak communist regime in November 1989. Recently, he has been the Czech energy security troubleshooter and has been recruited as an advisor by Sweden's current EU presidency. During a gap in his busy schedule, I asked Mr. Bartuška how he came to be one of the leaders of the student protests.
I think it was all basically enough to be willing to risk a little bit and do something against the regime. In fact, it wasn't that difficult to become a leader because there were very few people who actually did something openly against it. So if Prague had 40,000 students at the time, the whole number of people who were somehow actively involved in either illegal papers or demonstrations, organizing that stuff, the number would be 20, 30 people, no more. So it was quite easy. There was no queue to join. Everybody was welcome.
And what did you actually do? What was your leadership role?
I got detained on August 21st, 1988, at the first big demonstration against the regime. And I suppose what really made them furious were the things I wrote for our student paper, which wasn't exactly illegal, but also not legal. It was just done. Some is that typical one. And I guess that was basically enough. Probably everything that the student movement did before November 89 would seem rather timid by today's standards. They just try to organize a few friends and just talk about things which are going on, write a few things in a not so official papers, but there were certainly no heroic acts to be done. But even that little brought me a few detentions and stuff like that.
During the actual revolution, what was your role?
I was a member of the Central Committee of Striking Students, and I was also very soon elected by the students to be member of the Committee of Parliament, which oversees the secret police, and later its disbanding of secret police and the investigations of what happened and why the police acted the way it did in November 89. So it was basically first just one of several many student leaders, and then this, I would say, expert on secret police. The reason for that was that I was the first to be detained by secret police, and I had behind me some experience with interrogations and stuff like that. So I was taken for an expert by my colleagues and friends, which of course wasn't true. I was no expert, but it seemed so.
Do you think everything about 1989 has now been explained sufficiently?
Well, you always have questions and mysteries in the past. I would say the main story is known, and I don't believe in any great conspiracy theories, definitely not in this country, because the favorite conspiracy theory is that the reformed communists with secret police somehow wanted the government to fall, or the communist leadership to fall down and to have, let's say, the Gorbachev way of revolution, or slowly reform. I don't believe that. You don't keep anything secret that's shared by more than two people, and definitely not for years. This is a country where basically everything spills out.
But in some ways, however, the secret police, the way the secret police reacted on the crucial day back when they repressed the student revolution, the march from Vyšehrad, it came out that one student was dead who wasn't dead. I mean, it seemed rather strange. Do you not agree?
Well, once you look at it in the context, you have major demonstrations since August 88, October 88, and January, a series of demonstrations. You heard them again in August, and again October 89. So by November 89, the police is becoming more and more experienced with how to suppress demonstration. At the same time, it's becoming more and more tired with it. and especially tired of the pressure from the Communist Party leadership saying, well, there should be no demonstrations. Make sure that nothing happens. Well, you can make sure that nothing happens when there is 20 people, not when there are 20,000. And you can be faster in suppressing, you can be faster in beating them up, you can bring more gentlemen or sticks, or you can bring, as they did on November 17th for the first time, the personal armored carriers, the almost like small tanks. But even with all this, you still have limitations. I mean, you can really squeeze thousands of people out of certain place fast enough. So there was plenty of, I would say, irritation on the part of the Communist Party and the police leadership or the Ministry of Interior leadership about the slowness and the whole disbanding of the demonstrations. So the people who were doing this were rather frustrated. I suppose the reason why they were rather harsh on that day and we got some rather big beating was this. As for the secret, so the dead student, well, that news spread the next day and it was not true. But it was probably one of the catalysts of the whole change. That was the game changer.
Later you came to write a book, Polo Jasno, about partly based on the parliamentary investigation. Yeah, fully based on the parliamentary investigation. Can you explain what you mean by the title?
Polo Jasno in Czech means two things. It means partly sunny, but it also means partly clear. And the book was published in fall 1990, but it was written already during the committee working. The title in Czech says it all. It's partly sunny, it's partly nice weather, finally, and it's partly clear what really happened. And I think that's so true. We don't like much the past, especially the past which is saying something nasty about ourselves. And the communist past is certainly something we don't want to discuss much, because we have to discuss basically how you can turn a relatively educated, well-off nation in the center of Europe into a nation of slaves.
Over the past few months, you've been the special ambassador for energy security for the Czech Republic, and now you've been asked also to work for the Swedish presidency of the EU. How much was of a surprise was the Swedish offer?
I've been doing this for the last 3 years for the Czech government, and the Swedish offer is to be advisor for their presidency, so I would like to insist that it's their presidency, and their only. This is the Sweden's moment in the sun and in the crosshair of photographers. I am just an advisor to them about Russia, Ukraine and gas, which is pointing to the crisis in January this year, which I think was one of the highlights of our presidency.
And are the Swedish priorities more or less similar to the Czech priorities?
I can just speak for the relatively small area, which is, let's say, the expertise they want from me, which is Russia, Ukraine, natural gas, the possibility of another crisis this winter. In this field, I think that their approach is very similar to the one which we had this January and during the whole presidency, which is basically telling both Moscow and Kiev, no, we are not going to pay any ransom to you. We are not going to be blackmailed by you. You have deals with us, especially Gazprom, to deliver gas to our borders or inside our territory. Please do so and really fix your internal difficulties with each other. Don't really ask us to become arbiters or negotiators between you, because no one outside of Moscow and Kiev really knows what goes on between those two. And there's no way of being a mediator when you don't know all the facts. We understand that there is a huge business going on in gas, in which plenty of people in the Russian and Ukrainian elite are making huge amounts of money. I'm talking about billions of dollars each year. And those who know don't talk, and those who do talk don't know. So there's basically no place for Europe to get involved in this.
Chris Johnstone speaking with Václav Bartuška. And that brings us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. Don't forget, this program and every other is available at our internet address, radio.cz, where you'll also find special reports, features, and more. If you'd like to comment on anything from this program, we're always glad to hear it. Our email address is english@radio.cz, and our mailing address is Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, and all of us here at Radio Prague, we thank you for listening, and we wish you the best.